morning and welcome to the breakfast show on Faith FM with Kathy and Lawson. This is the best table for you to start your day with positive and uplifting thoughts. You're listening across Australia on 87.6, 87.8 or 88 depending on where you are. You may also listen to us on our Faith FM app. Please chat with us, send us your messages, your thoughts, your complaints, your prayers, anything to 0491 064669. We love to interact with you. Today is Tuesday, July 30. I'm in the studio with Lawson, himself, the man, the goat, the greatest of all time.
The goat, wow.
And what? At the decks today, we have who? Rachel.
Yeah, Rachel. DJ Rach.
DJ Rachel with us in the show. Good morning to both of you.
Of course, producer Shell and her husband Lyle are off gallivanting, hanging out, spending time. They went on a cruise. What are we doing? We're just at work. They're holiday.
We should, you know, talk to the big brass at Faith FM and say, yeah, hey, can we do like a cruise studio?
Yes.
In a massive cruise ship. I have a quote of the day, Lawson, that I quite like. Mm-hmm. It's from a man called Vincent van Gogh.
Okay.
The very famous painter and artist.
Mm-hmm.
This is what he says. Great things are not done by impulse, but a series of small things brought together.
Yeah, interesting. I mean,
Isn't that amazing?
This is reflected definitely in his art. But I think that's very wise and insightful.
Yeah, because we sometimes think that, yeah, we have to do something big by a massive impulse. You know, it's just like a series of small things. What is the next small thing you can do to draw you closer to God's plan for your life? And in today's show, we're going to be talking about spray-on shoes. We're going to have some updates on the Paris Olympics and the faith of certain athletes. We're going to be talking about the new details of Trump's plan to stop the war in Ukraine, an interview with Simon Pizzizzi about his journey of faith. And in our Bible study today, we're going to be covering Mark chapter 5. We're going to be seeing who was the first missionary that Jesus has ever sent. This show is packed. You cannot miss it today.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
Before we talk about spray-on shoes, mm-hmm, are you wearing one today, Lawson? This is why you came barefoot to the studio?
I'm not barefoot. I'm wearing shoes, man. Come on.
Before we tell us all about spray-on shoes, what is the first quiz question of the day, Lawson?
Hey, the first quiz question of the day is simply this, guys. A fill in the blank. For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be blank. If you know the answer to that one, 0491-064-669. That is the number to text. Again, for everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be blank. If you answer that one correctly, you will go into the draw to win our amazing prize for this week. We have a brand new Andrew's Study Bible that we want to give to you absolutely for free. Now, this is a high quality, expensive Bible that will be a huge blessing to you. It also has quotations, it has commentaries, it even has Bible study guides in it so that not only can you learn the Bible, but you can also teach the Bible to others. This is like the Ferraris or Range Rovers of Bibles.
It is
right here.
It is a Ferrari of Bibles. And I'll tell you this, Lawson, I have one. I love mine. I read from it pretty much every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite Bibles. Mm-hmm. I liked it so much that I bought one for my wife as well.
Good present.
And I'll tell you this. One feature that I like is that in certain key passages of the Bible,
mm-hmm,
it has a chain reference studies. So, for example, you're talking about a passage that has a reference to what happens to a person when they die.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that in order for us to understand this topic biblically, we need to look into everything that the Bible says about what happens after death. And that can sometimes be daunting. Where do you even start? Well, in that Bible, you go to these passages and it tells you, hey, you want to know more about this topic? And it has like 20 or 30 very interesting topics. It just tracks through the whole Bible. Mm. So you can have an informed, biblical worldview about topics that really do matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, that sounds fantastic. We want to give this to you absolutely for free. The only way to get it is to answer quiz questions, and then we're going to be spinning the wheel at the end of this week at 8:45 a.m. on Friday morning. So guys, make sure you get in with your answers. Hey, I said that I was going to talk about spray-on shoes. And you might be thinking, well, what does that mean? Of course, it is Olympic season at the moment, and the big technology comes out during the Olympics. You know, what little technology people can use, you know, whether it's, I think back to, you know, talked earlier in the week about the first Olympics I watched, I remember, because we're like the swimming nation. Australia is so good at swimming. Our government invests a lot of money in swimming and everyone goes swimming, but we are like incredible at swimming. And I remember 2008, we had the swimming, the super suits, and like every category, every world record was being broken at the Olympics.
I remember that.
Because these suits that like covered you like basically head to toe were like holding people above the water, and then they were banned for the next Olympics, these kinds of things. In the last Olympics, Nike.
I didn't know that they were banned.
No, they were.
A lot of people got tired of wearing them.
No. If you look at the Olympics, if they would keep wearing them because they're so good, but if you look at the Olympics now, they've gone back to a more like traditional swimsuit. And speaking of the swimming as well, like we just had Australia finish first and second in the women's 200 freestyle. So like we're in fourth or fifth in medal tally. Now the big technology that came in the last Olympics regarding running was Nike showed up with these shoes called the Vaporflies, or Vaporfly. I believe they're called Vaporfly 4% or Vaporfly 1%. Basically, no, it's 4%. These shoes were so ergonomic that they made you like 4% more efficient at running. And it got to the point where non-Nike athletes, like these shoes were so good. They had this like new technology of like this carbon insert and all this stuff. They were so good that like athletes that were sponsored by like Puma or Adidas were given dispensation by their brand to wear Nike shoes.
Oh, wow.
Basically, like they were like, you can wear Nike because
We want you to win.
We want you to win.
Yeah.
And it's like all the other shoe brands were kind of caught unawares and they didn't know how to respond to like, you know, just this, all of a sudden this shoe that was like way better than every other shoe ever created. That really gave you like a 4% increase in your ability to run, which 4% is massive.
It's
huge. This Olympics, On, which is a German brand, have shown up with spray-on shoes. And you might be thinking, how does that work? Well, this has the fancy carbon sole insert. You know, everyone's developed a technology similar to those Nike Vaporflies that came out 4 years ago. But instead of this one having laces, which, you know, slow you down because they're less aerodynamic and they're heavy. These things, you put the sole of the shoe on your foot and they spray this gel, this like, you know, and the information about this, like the certain composite of plastic that it's made up by, like it's information that On are keeping incredibly close to their chest. But they spray this plastic over your foot. It sets in 3 minutes and you have like a perfectly sized running shoe of which there is no need for like laces or anything like that. It's perfectly molded to your foot.
Okay. So it's transparent. It's just you feel like you're running barefoot?
Well, I'll give you a look. It's like this one here, it's white, and so obviously they've sprayed the shoe on and then done a decal over the top of it. So it looks like a shoe without laces, but how it actually gets put on your foot is that they spray it onto you. Now, I was looking these up and they are reusable. This isn't like a non-reusable shoe. So they are reusable. And in fact, we could go and buy some of these spray-on shoes. They have I'd imagine it's more of a consumer edition compared to the version that
could
they
be
have
the prize
the
of the week.
But it's for $300, you can come into the studio. We'll spray on some shoes for you. But yeah, I thought this was incredibly interesting and it's always interesting. Like, I don't think we ever would have thought that spray-on shoes would be the move, but at the Olympics, like, and this is being worn by, you know, this isn't like an experimental technology that they paid lots of money to an athlete that might not win to wear. This is being worn by Kenyan runner Helen Obiri. She is like the 2020 silver medalist for her particular event, and so like And basically they're saying, like, you know, the few milliseconds that she lost the gold by, this will give her that ability. It's also being worn by an Australian middle distance runner, Ollie Hora, and Luke McCann as well. So the two Australians are wearing these shoes. And yes, brown shoes apparently are the way of the future for the Olympics. Well, we'll see. If they win, it will be the way of the future. If they win, similarly to Nike in 2020, everyone will be trying to develop a system similar to this. Everyone is trying to come up with the new best shoe. But.
Okay, but just one thing, Lawson, just to clarify, I'm looking here.
Yeah.
And the spray-on shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I thought you had like a can, and you just like, before you go for a run, you just like spray it.
Of course not.
You have to go to a lab.
Yeah, that's right.
And they will, you know, scan your feet first, and then they're going to create that perfect mold.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I probably should have clarified. It's not just like you're walking out the door and they spray it on. Yeah, it's that they have a spray-on plastic that goes over your foot, like a mold of your foot. Now, hey, which again, this is like the newest, latest and greatest technology, and no more use for laces, no more use for sizing. Everything is like perfectly individualized to your foot.
That is awesome. That is
But I want to tell you about some shoes that are a little bit older, but I think are the best shoes out. No, I'm not talking about, you know, Nike, Michael Jordan ones, you know, from the 1980s. I want to read you a Bible verse. Stand therefore, this is Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 14. Stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. This is the advice that Paul is giving here, and it's in a passage about the armor of God. Now, obviously, this is an illustration. There isn't like these special shoes that we get from heaven. You know, if someone tells you that they're selling shoes from heaven, don't believe them. They are lying to you. But, you know, the shoes of the gospel of peace, this is something that we have talked about before on The Breakfast Show, that idea of gospel or evangelion, the good news to be proclaimed to the earth, and the job that a particular Greek in his army would have to go and tell everyone the good news that, hey, we have won the war, you know, and they would be running to and fro and telling everyone the evangelion, the good news, the gospel. And drawing on that allusion, Paul is writing here, having shod your feet, you know, putting on the gospel of peace, putting on and walking with and living life purposely, understanding that Jesus Christ, he's lived, he's died, he's resurrected for you. You know, put a spring in your step today. Put a smile on your face, realizing that your shoes aren't spray on or aren't have a carbon sole or imprint or whatever, but your feet are shod with the gospel of peace. That your feet and your day and your purpose has been motivated by the fact that Jesus has lived and died and resurrected.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
Before we talk about politics and before we talk about Donald Trump and the Olympics, what is the second quiz question of the show?
Hey, our next quiz question is this. Name at least one of two Bible heroes that were recorded wearing clothing of hair and a leather belt. Name at least one of these people. Now, this is like a specific description of some people in the Bible. If you know who they are, if you know who one of them is, 0491-064-669 is the number to text. Again, name at least one of the two Bible heroes. There are two different people who are described like this specifically that were recorded as wearing clothing of hair and a leather belt. 0491-064-669 is the number to text if you know the answer. That one, of course, our prize for this week. We have the amazing Andrew Study Bible that we want to give to you absolutely for free. So again, text us 0491-064-669. And if you know the answer to that question and you answer it correctly and you send it to us, you'll go in the draw, which will happen at 8:45 a.m. on Friday.
Very, very good. Lawson, let's talk about the Olympics for a second, shall we?
Okay.
Okay, so we've been talking about the, to be honest, very distasteful, horrendous, really.
Yeah.
Opening ceremony. And a lot of people got really, really offended about that, particularly Christians throughout the world. We spoke about that yesterday. But I want to talk about someone else now that also had to do something with Christianity and the Olympics. And it is my Brazilian compatriot.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Raíssa Leal. And she won the bronze medal in skateboarding.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, I saw this event and I was, I think I know where you're going with the story, but I was incredibly impressed.
That's right. So there's a, apparently there is a very big sort of, discomfort in this, particularly in this Paris Olympics about expressing your faith in public. Now, the French athletes have been expressly told not to portray any kind of religious symbols, not, you know, while they're representing France. So France have, according to them, a policy called laïcité, meaning a very sharp separation between church and state. So the state is not allowed to even talk about anything, mention pretty much religion. And the athletes are imposed with that. That being said, the French government says that, hey, when you're in the Olympic Village, you can do whatever you want. You can wear your hijabs. But even for Muslim ladies that normally compete with hijabs, they say, no, no, no hijabs, like nothing that could resemble religion whatsoever.
Wow, that's okay? Really tough. Yeah. Like,
they say that they don't impose this to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, some of the athletes, including Raíssa, they're finding creative ways of sharing their faith in Jesus.
Yeah.
So when the camera zoomed into Raíssa after her remarkable stellar performance that made her gain the bronze medal yesterday, she quoted a Bible verse in using sign language.
Yeah, this is amazing. I love this video. I saw this video like come up on Instagram like very soon after it happened. But yeah, oh, so it's so awesome.
She quoted in sign language John 14 verse 6 where Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me."
Mm.
And people picked it up. They wanted to say, "Hey, what is she talking about in sign language?" Because nobody could boycott her. Because they didn't understand what she was talking about.
Yeah.
Until the media cracked the code, so to speak. So that's very nice. Just a little bit about her. She was actually Brazil's youngest Olympian in 2021 when she was 13 years of age. And she won the silver medal in skateboarding.
Yeah, dude, it's like skateboarding at the moment is having this huge boom of like, in particularly in the women's skateboarding, like the winners are like all under 16 years old.
Yeah.
And they're just destroying everyone. And that's why Japan is currently leading the Olympics, because they've gotten gold in the men's and the women's skateboarding. Because, like, at the moment, for some reason, Japan is, like, the skateboarding nation of the world. Like, really amazing. But, yeah, it's awesome to see. And I remember I have some friends who, like, who are deaf, parents are deaf and whatnot. And, like, I've learned a bit of sign language for them. And, yeah, the video came up on my Instagram feed and I saw, you know, she did pointing to the hands with the middle fingers. It's like the sign language for Jesus, you know, like the way, the truth. Like, it's so amazing to see. I love it when athletes, just express their faith. And, you know, for me, personally, simultaneously, like I look at the athletic lifestyle and, you know, it's good that they're like healthy and whatnot, but it is incredibly fast paced and high pressure, like in excruciatingly high pressure. Like you're talking about the most performance based jobs that there is.
Yes.
You have to just be better than everyone else to earn a living. Like that's what it is. And, and it's, man, I think I really enjoy when, like, there are faith-based athletes, because they often portray a message to their peers who might not have a faith. That is, this isn't everything. Like, sports isn't everything there is to life. Because there's countless stories, actually, of athletes really struggling, particularly post-career, even if they were successful, like struggling with alcoholism, struggling with depression and suicide, because of this overwhelming feeling of, oh, maybe I'm a failure, I'm not good enough, because you are conditioned throughout your entire career to believe that you're only as good as the results that you can produce. And so it's amazing to see faith-based athletes, you know, athletes of faith who are stepping into that space and saying, hey, look, this is my job. I'm like really talented and good at this, but this isn't all there is. Like, I have a Father in heaven. I have a Savior who loves me. And I want all of you guys to know that as well. So really love encouraging.
That's
stuff.
A great reflection, Lawson, and particularly coming from you who experienced that life of high performance, athletics, you know, in motorbiking. You know, thanks for that. I just wanted to briefly talk about Trump's peace plan for Ukraine. So this was an article on the Wall Street Journal released by, written by Mike Pompeo, who used to be Trump's Secretary of State.
Yeah,
wow. He's responsible for the whole security. He's a general. And he released some bullet points here, which I found quite interesting. This was on Friday. And basically they said, hey, a lot of people are saying that if Donald Trump gets reelected, that he would withdraw completely any and all support militarily and otherwise to Ukraine. It says this could not be further from the truth. Mm. Actually, it was Donald Trump who helped to pass on. He gave him his blessings to Mike Johnson.
Yeah.
So that they could approve the latest $60 billion package. So this is, so basically Trump's response would be, instead of cutting aid, according to Mike Pompeo, would be to boost aid.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So they're talking about a land lease agreement and a credit line for up to $500 billion. And they said that Ukraine can buy whatever weapon systems they want.
Uh-huh.
No restrictions to use them. And the idea is that with that will come that they'll have to negotiate with Russia. So the according to Mike Pompeo, it was like Russia knows that they have the upper hand on Ukraine because Ukraine is weaker militarily than them. Yeah. They want to make Ukraine – they want to say, hey, Ukraine, you can buy from us whatever guns, whatever weapon systems you need to defend yourself. And in this way, Russia will be forced to stop the war with you because they realize that we're not just giving, you know – a little bit of help here, a little bit of help there, and kind of keeping the whole war in a bit of a bain-marie.
Yeah.
We're going to give you a sizable, respectable military, and we're not going to give it to you. It's not going to be costing on the U.S. taxpayers. You're going to be buying from us.
Mm.
This is exactly what happened in World War II when the U.S. lent the money to the U.K. so that they could fight.
That's right.
Actually, the U.K. just finished. You know how when the U.K. finished repaying their land lease debt to the United States?
No.
In 2006, 61 years later.
Wow.
They paid everything, every penny with interest in, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the idea there. It's, to say, and then not to recognize, not recognizing the territories that Russia has annexed, and include, integrating Ukraine into the UN, sorry, not the UN, into the NATO. European Union and NATO. And so there's very, you know, interesting points there. This is like his proposal to say, hey, with this, Ukraine can actually negotiate face-to-face, and Russia will see that this war is going to be too costly, and they will just stop, seize the war immediately.
Yeah.
So that's the plan. Now, it reminds me of a Bible verse here. In Revelation chapter 13 and verse 4, it says, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Now, this is talking about the first beast in particular, but which is a Christian religious system, according to the Bible, and state that over history persecuted those who dissented from her for 1,260 years. You know, how many institutions can actually fit that bill? Well, I'll let the listener decide on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bible indicates also that this period would be from 538 to 1798 after Christ. But he also says that the United States, who is referenced in Revelation as the beast of the earth, want to make an image to that beast. So it would be very interesting to see if Trump gets reelected and if that is indeed the policy that he pursue, if he will come with that understanding from the rest of the world, like who can wage war with the beast? Like they're so powerful. They're boosting up their military. Who can wage war with them? Because at the moment, it looks like there's some people defying that, China and Russia and Iran. And could it be that the United States will reassert its position as a military superpower so that the whole world will marvel after it? And it will say, who can wage war against the beast?
Yeah, that's very, very incredible observations here. And I think that we will end up in a situation with this particular superpower. Every other country being subservient to it for that reason, and an inability to surpass it militarily.
A political and religious superpower at the same time.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. positively different.
The next quiz question is this. As evidence of taking a vow, what did Paul do in Centuria? If you know the answer to that one, 0491-064-669. If you answer that question correctly, you go into the draw to win the Andrew Study Bible. Again, as evidence of taking a vow, what did Paul do in Centuria?
And today's interview is with Simon Pedzidzi, my friend and a clinical practitioner who is here going to talk about his journey of faith. Simon, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Such a pleasure.
So, Simon, before we delve a little bit into your journey of faith, I wanted to ask a little bit about you so that our listeners can get to know you a little bit better. So if you could tell us a little bit about your background, about where you're from, about your family, some of these things so that we can situate ourselves into who you are.
Sure. So my name is Simon Pedzidzi, as already identified, and I was born in Zimbabwe. And for those who don't know where Zimbabwe is actually in the southern African part of the continent of Africa. And so I was born in 1982, which sounds now like a very long time ago, but still feels like yesterday. God's blessings have been so amazing, and his journey has just made life so short. And I'm from a family of five, the second born from, I've got an older sister, I've got a young brother, and the other girls. So I was born in a Christian family. And so just grew up in the Christian denomination and being a Seventh-day Adventist, being in church and everything. I went to a boarding school, which was an Adventist boarding school. And when it comes to my journey of faith, that was the beginning of being tested in terms of not just following what the family was doing, but being in an environment where I had to exercise my own faith, because I was in a boarding school, which was about 4 hours away from home. And I was on my own. And so I had a great time. I had a wonderful, wonderful time. The boarding school was situated in a region which was not a region which spoke the same language as the mother tongue that I spoke. And so there was a lot of challenges where I had to learn a new language, try and work out how to assimilate and connect.
So that was people within Zimbabwe?
That was still within Zimbabwe.
But still a different language altogether from what you're used to.
Different language altogether, but when I look back now, that was God's plan of preparing me for a journey that I was going to go into a foreign land and then be exposed to not just a different language, but a different culture, a different way of living, which was outside of what I grew up in.
Tell us a little bit about that. So you mentioned that you grew up in a Christian home and in a Seventh-day Adventist family, but it wasn't until you went to the boarding school that you had to make a decision and own your own faith. Mm-hmm. Tell us briefly a little bit about that process. What drove you to say, you know what, I want to be a follower of Jesus on my own, not because of my parents? Was there anything that specifically happened for you to trigger that decision, or something that happened gradually over time?
I think what happened was the fact that I had a sense of faith comfort at home, where, you know, everything was just a routine. We pray, we go to church, we come back, we have worship, we have this, we have that. So I was just in a routine where my Christian journey was just following what was happening around me. It was up to until where I didn't have my parents or my friends or my family members to say, let's pray. And when I started facing challenges and difficulties, because one of the other things about myself is I went to school when I was very, very young. So in every class that I went to, I was always the youngest by 3 or 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And therefore that meant that when I was at school, it was hard to make friends. And because I was always the smallest boy, I was always the youngest and so forth. And I think that started to actually cause me to feel a little bit isolated and a little bit more aware that actually I need to do more in order to connect with friends, to connect with people, and to connect and feel that I belonged. And I think that's what actually caused me to start looking for a sense of belonging. And I think I found it in my faith and actually having Jesus as my friend, Jesus as my shadow, and Jesus as my companion, and Jesus as my roommate, and everything. I think that's what actually catapulted my faith into
being
connected.
Wow, that's a great, that's amazing. So you mentioned that earlier on as well, you had an opportunity to experience a different culture altogether. Where was that place? And tell us a little bit about the events that led you to move out of Zimbabwe.
So when I finished my high school, I always thought I wanted to be an electro engineer. That was my dream. That's what I had planned. God obviously had a different plan. And so what happened was, when I finished my first year at college, the college that I was studying at, they actually closed down. And because the curriculum was Cambridge University based, and a friend of mine who had actually moved to the UK said to me one time when we were talking over the phone, why don't you come and continue your studies in the UK? And I was like, well, you know, I'm not sure about that. You know, I was about 16 years old. And so I thought, okay, I'll talk to my parents, but I'm not sure they're going to allow me to, you know, make that journey on my own. So anyway, I prayed about it. I spoke to my parents, and lo and behold, they said, yeah, sure, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So we started investigating, you know, how to move to the UK. It took 6 months. Again, because, you know, whenever God has a plan, the devil will always be waiting to find a way to discord that. And what happened was, we paid an agency who was meant to have organized our flights, accommodation, and everything I needed in the UK, because I was going by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And once we paid, they used up the money. So,
oh no,
yeah, I was just waiting, and every day just praying and saying, God, do you really want this to happen? When is it going to happen? So you can imagine, I had my
bags. They stole the money from you, and they just disappeared with it.
Well, they were there, but they kept telling us, no, tomorrow, or the flights are delayed, or we can't find the right flights, or, you know, something is not quite right. So it just became story after story for about 6 months.
And what did you do about that?
Well, my dad, he just decided one day that enough was enough. So what he said was like, son, let's go to their offices and we won't leave until, you know, something happens. So we went there, and, you know, I think God was also working with him, because when he got there, initially they thought we were joking around, but, you know, we waited and waited, and until, you know, that night, that's when I got the flights and everything booked, and you know, rushed to the airport with just half an hour to spare, caught the flight, and yes, boarded over to England. And that's when my journey in phase two of faith also began.
So tell us a little bit about that. So that was the first part, you know, that questioning, you know, God, are you behind all of this? Why is this all so hard and so difficult? And he used your father and persistence to say, you know what, let's do this. You know, it is God's will. So now you see yourself, you find yourself 16 years old in a foreign country in the UK. Wasn't that intimidating? How did it feel for you? And what happened next?
So when I was on the flight, it was exciting. You know, an adventure, going somewhere new. I was wondering, how's this going to be like? But when I got there, I started facing reality, because, you know, I was thinking, right, I got to the airport, rang the agent who told me that, Simon, your payment has not been made for accommodation. So we don't have accommodation for you. And also we are overbooked, and so there's no way we can help you. So there I was at the airport, didn't know anybody, didn't have any family in the UK, and I was pretty much homeless. And again, God's providence is amazing, because, you know, he sent people who helped. I remember there was a lady who just turned up from nowhere and just said, are you okay? You know, where are your parents? I said, well, my parents are back in Zimbabwe. And she said, okay, do you need any help? So I explained my situation, and she said, look, let's call your parents and try and see if we can find somebody else. And so my parents found one of, our other churchmates, back home, who had a son who was in the UK. And so, you know, they rang him up, and then we got connected, and he took me in. And that was just, you know, one part where, yes, one issue resolved, but it opened up another challenge, because when he took me in, it was all great. Day one, he brought me to his accommodation, and he said, look, I'm going to be away for a while. And so just make sure that, you know, you're safe, you're here. I'll come and check on you. I'm going to work. And so as it happened, again, talking about how the devil is always working and looking for ways to cause discord, he said, how much money do you have? And I just landed into the country. So I thought, well, you know, I've got this much. He said, yeah, well, I need to pay rent. So I couldn't go to the bank because I had to come and pick you up. So if you give me the money you have, I'll come back later and I'll, you know, bring some cash and give it back to you. So he left. And I never saw him for another 5 months. And that was it.
Wow.
I know. So there I was in a, you know, in a room. Didn't know who else, you know, lived in that particular house. And I waited for him. I arrived on a Monday. So that was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I just stayed in that room, just praying and just asking God, you know, do something. I'm in a foreign land. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to do. I couldn't even phone my parents because, I didn't have money. I didn't have a phone. I also didn't have keys to the house. So in the UK, most buildings or houses, they have a locking mechanism whereby when you shut the door and you don't have a key,
you're locked on the outside.
Absolutely. So I couldn't go outside or do anything. And also I was worried that, you know, I could see that it was a house with four bedrooms and I didn't know who the other people were and I hadn't seen them. So I was just like in the room, almost like I was in prison for the 4 days. Until on Sabbath, I decided, look, if I stay in here, I'm going to die of hunger. So I need to...
There's no food there even for you.
There wasn't anything. So what I discovered was that this guy wasn't actually living in this house. He was living with a girlfriend somewhere else. And this was just his sort of address of abode where he kept his, you know, minimum property. And so, yeah, there was no food because he was probably only coming back once in a while. And then, so on the Sabbath, I decided, okay, I'm gonna go downstairs and just wait. And whoever comes into the house, and I'll explain to them what the situation is. And God just make something happen. So anyway, as it happened, I waited downstairs, and I think about 11 o'clock in the morning, heard the door opening, and my heart was pounding, and I was thinking, okay, I wonder, you know, I didn't even know the nationality of the persons who lived in the house. So I was thinking, okay, they're going to freak out finding a stranger sitting in there. They're going to think that I've broken in the house, and are they going to call the police? What's going to happen? But anyway, this guy walked in, and he was the most gentlest and kindest and nicest person ever. So I explained the situation, and he tried to call this guy, and we couldn't get hold of him. And he said, look, I've got a brother your age who'll be coming over in 2 weeks' time. So I think this is a perfect scenario whereby he will find someone to actually connect with and befriend. So he was happy to support me, look after me. And from that point onwards, I saw God work in miraculous ways that I couldn't even start explaining without spending the next 2 weeks talking about it. But, you know, from just getting a job where most people would wait for a very long time to get a job, I got a job within, you know, the first week and a half of being there. Within the first 2 weeks, I had a vehicle to use because I was working two jobs. I managed to get a college and enrolled, and I had to pay my own school fees. So in the two jobs that I was working, I had enough money.
You're earning
to pay
enough
for my,
wow,
you know, accommodation, my deposit
tuition
for the school, all sorts of things. And when I rang my parents, because of course this was almost 2 weeks after, my parents were upset because initially they were thinking, you know, what happened to you? Why didn't you call us? You know, they didn't know the situation, and I didn't want to tell them what happened because I didn't want to, you know,
upset them. Yes.
Or for them to say, come back home. You know, you've got your home here. You've got a home. You've got, you know, so I just thought, let me just keep it to myself. And then, you know, God has sorted it out. And therefore, you know, let's just move on.
So Simon, in the, we have 30 seconds to end this interview, and we're going to call you again so you can continue sharing with us what happened after that and how you became a clinical practitioner that is recognized nationwide in the UK and your journey to Australia as well, because that's another story in itself. But what I want to ask is when you look back at all these things that have happened to you, what is the one lesson that you take from all of that journey?
God is consistent and God is real. So my journey could not be a story being told if it wasn't that God had already written it before my existence. And therefore his faithfulness and consistency meant that every time when I prayed, he already had a situation resolved in advance of me experiencing the situation. And so, you know, we talk about miracles and we read about miracles in the Bible. And sometimes it sounds like a distant story that happened many, many years ago. But in my journey, God has worked miracles over and over again that actually make him even more real in my own personal experience.
Dr. Simon Pedzizi, thank you very much for your interview today. And you will be back here with us in the studios so we can hear the continuation of your faith journey. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.